Welcome, fans, to SMQB's episode 204. We've got Bison back with us. We missed you, man. Welcome back.
Yeah, happy to be back. Might be a little bit of a cameo. I might be out another couple of weeks.
I know. He's been out trying cases and kissing babies.
Yeah,
exactly. All right.
Something like that.
Well, let's just get right into it. We start out with a segment called Who You're Going to Take to the Bar, which is really an excuse to talk to some interesting people in the world of sports. So, Bison, welcome back. Who are you taking to the bar this week?
Well, Rooster, you might appreciate this. I'm going to bring one Hal Steinbrenner to the bar this week because changes have run amok in New York, and I don't know what to make of this. And I've got a lot of questions. I mean, first, I think you guys maybe talked about it last week, or it's been around that, you know, they got rid of the no facial hair rule for the Yankees.
Right.
Well, then today, I don't know if you've seen the news today.
New York, New York.
They're not going to play it after losses this season. So historically, it's been as soon as the game's over, win or lose, New York, New York hits the air. And we got news today that that is not going to happen after losses.
Well, that's because the license holder required them to play it a minimum number of times, and they're not planning on making that minimum this year.
Of course.
Oh, wow.
Well, I
knew there was a silver lining there somewhere.
Wow.
Milk.
What's next? Red uniforms?
Who are you taking to the bar, Milk?
I am bringing John Cooper, Lightning head coach, but also the coach of Team Canada.
Yes, indeed.
I'm going to congratulate him on a well-earned Four Nations victory and also pick his brain on the second half of the year because we are the hottest team in the NHL and we're about to take the... And then, we're about to pass Moose Jaw's Toronto Maple Leafs in the standing.
I sense somebody's already given up on the Rays. Pope. Pope, who are you taking to the bar?
I'm going to throw a curveball. I'm taking John Shire to the bar.
Wow. Whoa. That is a curveball.
I am interested in talking to him, buying him as much as he would like to drink, about the pressure that he's going to be feeling very soon to follow the steps of Coach K with a team that, by all accounts, should be a Final Four possible national champion team. And just kind of see how he's feeling because the pressure is going to increase. All the Dukies that I know, they think this is their year.
You know, I saw Coach K in Richmond week ago Saturday at the Richmond Forum. He was the guest speaker. And one of the things in a question about UVA and Tony Bennett, he sort of in a backhanded way said, unlike UVA, that Duke had a succession plan in place for many years and Shire was ready to step right up to the plate. And now, of course, 3 years into it, he's got his team back to where they think they always belong. Whereas UVA, Tony Bennett just left them cold and they had no idea he was retiring and no plans to replace him. I am going to take to the bar a trio of fellow NFL combine draft lunatics who actually love this part of the sport like I do. Mel Kiper, Dane Brugler from The Athletic, and Todd McShay, and just ask them to tell me what they do to get ready for this crazy time of year, because I think the draft is going to be really interesting this year.
Be careful with McShay.
Before I turn this over to Bison, I just want to put in a plug for our sponsors, starting with Injury Board, Milk's Company, the number one networking organization for plaintiff's lawyers in the United States, Europe, and Canada. If interested, check out injuryboard.org. And also our friends at DLM, Digital Law Marketing, the greatest law marketing company out there, in my opinion. We've been with them for about 3 years, and the results have been incredible. And Bison can speak to that as well, because he also uses them.
Shoot, we might be 10 years at this point with DLM.
All right, Bison, you want to take it away?
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, this is not something we usually lead with, but the NHL... And a lot to talk about with this Four Nations thing on the heels of Moose Jaw's discussion last week appearing on the pod. Did we get the greatest game in recent hockey memory.
I will go so far as to say it is the best game I personally have enjoyed since the Lake Placid Olympics.
Wow.
1980. I mean, well, honestly, can you think of a more exciting
game? Were you alive, game? Milk?
No. As a Gryphers. Now, wait, Rooster, why do you say that? Because, like, I thought the hockey game itself was outstanding.
It was.
I thought the U.S. collapsed in OT, and the defense was terrible. Not to mention Austin Matthews was completely, I think he dropped the ball entirely on that last shot. That guy was so open. That was McDavid, right?
Yeah.
Don't leave that guy wide open to take the shot. But I don't know, the drama and the lead up, the build up, like they were trying to make this like USA, Russia.
Game was anybody's to win throughout the entire game. No one was skating away with that game at any point in the game.
And the Canadian goalie stood on his head during
it. Sure did.
Oh, my God.
Connor McDavid, the best player in the NHL right now, was having a horrible game. Terrible. He couldn't even keep the puck on his stick most of the game. Someone was passing the puck, he'd lose it. And then he hits the game-winning shot. I mean, it was an incredibly dramatic game.
Those guys just brought it, too. I mean, they were not messing around. I mean, to think that this is some sort of like fill-in for an all-star, a weekend type of thing, right? I mean, and I heard you guys talk about it last week about how silly all the all-star games have gotten to be at this point, and they're just kind of spectacles. But you think that that's what this was. This was the all-star-ish break for the NHL. And you look at how those guys just pounded each other. I mean, they cared. Wow, did they care.
To the point that I was asking Moose, how many of these guys are going back to play on their own team, having come from the opposite side of this finals game? You know, in other words, a Canadian and an American going back to play for the Leafs, etc. And there are two or three teams that have that going on. I bet those guys are going to have a hard time speaking to each other for a couple of weeks.
The only reason I'll disagree with that is because these guys are hockey players and they're all insane. And they like getting fist fights with each other just for a good time, right? And then they go back and have a beer.
Scrimmages might be a little spirited.
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying.
I mean, it was intense. It was intense.
I mean, it was intense. It shows you like, I mean, it is crazy how far USA hockey has come. It's nuts. Like some of, you know, like Moose mentioned last week, two guys that were born in Phoenix and just how big it's got. I mean, just anecdotally here in Tampa, like it's huge in Tampa now, huge because of the Lightning. And it's just like they have caught up to the, I know the Canada won, but it could have gone either way. And USA hockey is right there with.
Well, the miracle on ice was 45 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a long enough time to do this and
catch up.
We're finally there, right? Yeah,
45 years.
Here's a quick stat question for you. How many penalty minutes were there in the final game?
In the final game?
Yep.
Not many. Canada. Not many.
Zero?
Two.
Yeah.
So it was a joy to watch and not have to worry about all the penalty minutes that we see in NHL, even in the playoffs. I mean, penalties will decide sometimes which teams advance. They just let them play. I thought it was great. They didn't get bogged down by penalties. The refs just let them play. Now, I don't think that there were as many cheap shots as you would have seen in an NHL playoff game. I don't know if maybe the teams were on a little bit better behavior after what happened in the first game.
So I think you would traditionally rank the popularity of the Big Four in the U.S., something like NFL at the top, probably NBA second, then Major League Baseball, then hockey. You could flip-flop the MLB and NBA from time to time. Does this give the NHL any traction, particularly at a point where we might talk about it a little later at some point, but with media rights in baseball and with the NBA, just, you know, there's a lot of people down on the NBA. Does this give the NHL a shot in the arm?
They're about to get a new commissioner, too, I think. He's about to retire. It may be time for the NHL to enter the modern world of sports media and marketing and all that and get more eyes on the game. I think they will. I think they will. And this is going to help.
It's too exciting not to be highly ranked. I love going to Lightning games. It's nonstop. Like
there's not a bad seat in the house either.
Yeah, it's a rink like that. A baseball game. I love baseball. Trust me, but sometimes it's boring. But like hockey, you are never not like excited watching a hockey.
Well, game. I can't speak to other arenas, but I can tell you that in DC, they put on a great environment. The environment being in the arena is fun.
Yeah. Look, a lot depends on how good your team is, obviously. But I think they put on a good show. Now, I think the NBA puts on a good show, too. The one I've been to.
I didn't think I'd ever hear you say that.
Yeah, no kidding.
The one game I've been to in the last 5 years.
One more than I've been to in the last 5 years, to tell you the truth. So, there was one thing missing from the Four Nations, and that was probably the greatest player in the world who wasn't there.
Putin's puppet.
Coming off his hat trick yesterday.
That was impressive. This was unreal. I just got to give you guys some Ovi stats here. I'm going to take 41 games and has 46 points this year. He's got 29 goals. Remember, he had a broken leg at one point in this season. He's got 29 goals. Dude's 39 years old. And right now, he's probably the most feared goal scorer in the NHL again. He's just, it's unbelievable. He got off to such a hot start. And I think, you know, most people, myself included, thought when he got injured, he'd peter out a little bit, probably get back to have about 25 goals this year or something like that. But he came back from that injury faster than anybody thought he would and just picked up right where he left off scoring goals. I think he's 13 away from passing Gretzky. And with what, like 24 games left this season, he's probably going to do it. Certainly when the playoffs start, because guess what? The Caps have the best record in the NHL right now. So there's no reason to think that they're not going to go deep into the playoffs. And unless I'm mistaken, I think playoff goals count, right? I mean, all that stuff counts for your career. So he's going to pass Gretzky this year, barring another injury.
Hey, who has the second best record in the NHL?
The second best record is the Winnipeg Jets.
And the third?
I don't know. So they're pretty far behind whoever's third. They dropped down pretty far.
Major, your Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
To play upon Milk's point that hockey in Dallas is just as hot, you know, as it was when they first came here back in the late 90s and got Stanley Cup. We have hockey centers all over Texas. Who would have thought?
No, it's crazy.
I mean, can you guys think of a bigger record that's been broken or about to be broken, like recently? Like, what's the biggest record that we've seen go down in recent memory?
Brady Kareem's scoring record.
That's a good one.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Brady got all-time passing yards.
Yeah. Roger Maris' home run record for the Yankees.
Yeah, we had a Judge, right? That was kind of an exciting thing that everybody was watching to see if he was going to get over 61, particularly because of the steroid stuff with McGuire, Sosa, and Bonds. So a lot of people think that's the true home run king now.
So when Avi gets it, will there be anybody who will come close to getting it again?
I mean, there always will be, right? There's always someone who's going to come along. Unless, of course, that asteroid hits us in 2032, which that would probably put a damper on anybody else's run.
I was saving that for buzzer beater, but I do have an update on that.
Well,
we are down to 0.00017% as of today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hmm. So those wishing for the asteroid in 2032, you need to find another one.
Who's after Ovi? Is it anyone active?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Probably not.
No, I don't think anyone's, because it's like Gordie Howe and.
Yeah. Let's see. It's Gretzky, Ovi, Howe, Jagr, Hull, Mike Gartner, Messier, Yzerman, Lemieux, Teemu Selanne, Luke Robitaille, Brendan Shanahan, Andrzejczuk, Joe Sakic, Ngilia, Hull, Crosby's at 19, and so Dino Cicerelli. Those are the top 20 all time. So Crosby's the only one.
He's the only active one.
He's not going to be able to do it.
Dude. No, he's 270 goals behind Ovechkin.
No, I mean, like, that. This thing could hold up for
decades. Yeah, and the more popular sport gets and the more money these guys make, the harder it's going to be to play that.
Yeah.
I think Lemieux could have done it if his back had held up.
Yeah, Lemieux was a guy who only played 915 games. By the way, Ovechkin's 20 games fewer than Gretzky right now, for people who care about that. So,
how many is that?
Gretzky played 1,487 and Ovechkin's at 1,467.
Mm-hmm. So if he breaks it, is he done? Is he going to retire?
No. I mean, they've got a legit shot at the cup this year, which okay, I don't think so anybody thought going
on. Well, after this year.
Andy skates the cup. Then he's done. Look,
he's got to report back to the Red Army.
he might be on the front lines.
Yeah, I mean, Winter Olympics are next year.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he does. Maybe he does.
You want to see Ovi break the record, or would you rather win the cup? Or what do you think he would rather have this year?
Oh, the cup.
Okay, obviously.
Easy, yeah. All right, hoops, college hoops.
Duke is back, baby. Sorry, Pope, but Duke's back.
Yeah, they are.
Looks like they're back for a long time. They passed out Milk's Gators today in the AP rankings.
Why.
And they're now number two. I honestly think they're going to be the best team in basketball by the time March Madness starts. What do you guys think?
What do you think? You love
Auburn.
They just handed Illinois the worst loss in Illinois' history.
Well, Illinois was also coming off their whole team had been sick, but I'm not going to diminish that they just destroyed them without really even needing Cooper Flagg. My worst nightmares, Auburn and Duke, are 1 and 2 in the polls of anything.
I love it. Yes.
So,
we all know you'll be an Auburn fan by the end of March.
I'm waiting for the asteroid if that becomes the case. I think Auburn has, you know, there was a lot of discussion on game day about Auburn versus Duke. Well, I mean, Auburn's already beat Duke once. Johnny Broome is probably going to get player of the year over Cooper. It's going to be close. But I mean, if you put Duke into the SEC, I think Duke's got some losses. The fact that Auburn is able to go through the SEC and only have two losses at this point is pretty amazing. If Auburn is able to win the SEC championship, which will be like a mini Final Four almost. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, you have Auburn, Florida, Tennessee, and Alabama all in the top six. And then others are just right behind them. So,
who beat Duke in the ACC?
Clemson, who's playing amazing. I saw Clemson firsthand at Moody at SMU on Saturday, and SMU played with them for the first half, and then Clemson just destroyed them in the second. Clemson's on a heater, but yeah. If they're losing into Georgia Tech in triple overtime, they would be on like a 16-game win streak. So Clemson's going to be tough, but I think, you know, it makes it easier for Duke to finish number one, Brewster, because they will win the ACC championship unless Clemson beats them. Auburn's going to have to go through three probably top 15 games and maybe two top 10 games to win the SEC championship, which is very difficult.
Yeah.
But clearly Auburn, Duke are going to get one seeds. I think, you know, right now, Florida, Houston, the way they have it stacked up, I wouldn't argue with that. I still think Tennessee or Alabama can sneak in and get a number one. It's certainly possible that the SEC gets three number ones. Houston slips at some point, and you have three SECs and Duke.
Problem is Florida's got a horrible stretch to end the year. A&M starting Saturday, Alabama at Bama, and then they play Ole Miss to end the year. So that's a brutal three.
They
three
all
games.
Do. Alabama has to play.
Yeah, I mean, SEC is
ridiculous, and they play at Auburn on.
I mean,
the final game.
SEC has four of the top six teams right now.
Yep,
but Auburn is.
I find that personally offensive.
Go Duke.
I know you do.
That really chaps my ass, man.
That'll make you a Duke fan.
Yeah,
Auburn
right.
is for real, by the way. Not just Broome. I mean, they have four outstanding guards.
Yep.
Their depth is ridiculous. I think their top like seven or eight guys play like an average of like 22 minutes. Like they're all over the place. I think they're the best team in the country. Obviously, they've been ranked that way for 7 weeks straight or whatever. But I like the Gators. I'm telling you guys. They're undervalued, I think. No one's talking about them. But watch out. I think they have three guards that could be all lottery picks. Walter Clayton, Will Richard, and Elijah Martin. All three of them came in from the transfer portal. So I think you could build a team around that in college basketball.
Look, you're throwing NIL money around. That's why the SEC is decided to make a statement.
So on that point, I got to say, Pitino.
Yes.
Can we talk about Rick Pitino
story of the year, I think.
What
Absolutely.
The hell? How this guy just
he's a good
continued.
Coach.
He's unbelievable.
Yep.
It's really hard to do what he's doing everywhere he goes.
They've been bad for most of this century. He's 2 years in and he's turned them completely around to the point where they now control the Big East.
I didn't realize they hadn't won the Big East in 40 years.
Yeah. And now they're terrible since Carnesecca left. And we're talking about how awesome it is that Shire turned around Duke, a perennial quarterfinalist, in just 3 years. We're talking about turning around a team in 2 years that has been in the toilet for almost 40 years.
And let me tell you who's going to feel a little heat from that, by the way. Ed Cooley has got to be feeling a little heat from the Patino success just up the Amtrak Acela line from Georgetown. So
it's good.
I haven't really followed the Big East this year. Rooster, does this speak to the weakness in the Big East, or is St. John's really that good?
They're that good. The Big East isn't weak this year. Creighton's good again. Marquette's good. Villanova's okay. My beef with UConn is, sure, we won two straight, but if you think about the offseason after the last win, what was Danny Hurley doing? He was basking in the glow of being courted by the Lakers. He was appearing on everybody's podcast, you know, telling about all his stupid little routines, like taking cold showers and everything. What he wasn't doing was recruiting, and they have done nothing to fill the empty cupboards on that team. And they don't have any stars on that team this year, and they're not going far, I can tell you that, in the tournament.
Well, they've earned a couple years off, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's not how Dean Smith would have handled it, or Coach K, or any of those people, Roy Williams. They would have been constantly recruiting. Same thing at Kentucky. You got to keep the cupboards full, even if your team is made up of one-and-dones. Keep them coming in every year. Connecticut has not done that. And they're going to suffer for a couple years.
They're still in fourth place.
20 wins this year. That's expectations because of national championships. Because I think they're going to have 20 wins.
They were going for a three-peat. Fourth place in the Big East is nothing.
There's only two teams in the top 25 from the Big East. St. John's and then Marquette's at 21, and they just got blown out in a game. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, how many bids are they going to? Is Connecticut going to get a bid?
They've got to be a bubble team.
Yeah.
Creighton can maybe get in, right?
Yeah.
Well, Creighton has the most votes other than – so they're technically 20.
If you're a team like Alabama that sometimes struggles to score a lot of points, you don't want to face one of these Big East teams in the tournament.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that Alabama-Auburn game was the dullest basketball I've seen in many, many years.
Well, Auburn's defense is suffocating.
Well, that's how they do it in the SEC, Rooster. It's not very fun.
It was like it was like watching Virginia play Virginia.
But you're right. Yeah, you put a St. John's up against Alabama with their defense, and Alabama absolutely struggles.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see.
All right. Anything else on college hoops?
Nope.
3 weeks,
Rooster.
From it's Selection your favorite Sunday.
Favorite time of the year, Rooster.
It is. You know, this time last year, I was getting ready to go to the combine. And what I'm curious to see is who is going to be this year's Braden Fisk. Remember that when I was telling you guys about, wow, there's this big defensive lineman who moves like a cat. And he and Jared Verse were just the huge guys with tons of speed and hustle. Well, the Rams drafted both of those guys and they hardly missed. Who's the guy who retired from their defensive line? Best defensive player in football for years. They did not miss him because of Braden Fisk, who was drafted in the second round, and Jared Verse in the first round. So who's going to be that guy this year? And again, this year, it's loaded with defensive linemen who are freakishly fast for their size, like Shamir Stewart at A&M and others. It'll be interesting to see how those guys all do. I do think, unlike a lot of people, the combine matters for some. The linebacker at Alabama with the unfortunate first name, Jihad Campbell. who the fuck names their kid Jihad? Come on. Anyway, that guy could jettison into the first round, depending on how he does. And then there are a bunch of quarterbacks who are not going to throw, leaving the door open for others like Jackson Dart and Milrow and Milk Sky, Dylan Gabriel, and Kyle McCord from Syracuse to maybe open some eyes and get a look in the second or third round. So it'll be fun to watch. I think every year somebody comes out of that and makes a name for himself that he didn't already have and improves his draft stock. Will Campbell is probably the best offensive tackle in college right now, and everybody wants to talk about his arm length. And then there's Josh Simmons, who was, may have been the best offensive tackle before he hurt his patella. So his medicals at this thing are going to be really important. So it'll be fun to see how that all shakes out. And then to me, the interesting thing is going to be there are five teams in the NFL that absolutely need a starting quarterback. And there are only two guys coming out in the draft who are even projected to be first rounders. So it's going to be interesting to see how these teams fill those spots with what's a limited selection of quarterbacks out there. Tennessee's got the first pick. What would you guys do? You hold on to Will Levis for another year and give him a shot? Or what do you do? You draft Cam Ward or you go after someone like Sam Darnold? What do you think they're going to do?
I don't think he can stay with Will Levis.
I think they're going to go Cam Ward.
I'm not seeing it with him. I mean, maybe they'll get Aaron Rodgers.
All right, so if you take Cam Ward, right, I don't think is a lock to be. I mean, we know none of these guys are locks, you know, to be quarterbacks in the NFL, right? It's like a 60-40 bet, even the best ones each year. So who are you leaving on the board, right? If you take a quarterback, you're leaving Travis Hunter, you're leaving Abdul Carter, you're leaving this McMillan from Arizona. I mean, I don't know. I think best player available is a better strategy, isn't it? Unless there's just a generational quarterback. And it's just so hard. They're so hit or miss. And then you look at a guy like Darnold and the year he had, and you kind of have to say, well, okay, in the right system and with the right team, there's a lot of guys out there who can be successful. I mean, we saw that last year with Darnold. So,
well, who besides Darnold do you think could be successful on another team?
Who's out there and available?
Yeah. I mean, it's Kirk Cousins, who's Stafford. Arm seems to be washed. Justin Fields, Stafford. I mean, I would put Darnold and Stafford at the top of that list.
I'd put Stafford at the top for sure.
If I'm Stafford, why would I leave the Rams? I mean,
right, to go play for the Titans or the Jets or the Giants or Cleveland or Raiders. Why would you do that?
I mean, it feels like if I'm Tennessee, why do you not take Travis Hunter? Like, that just feels like the best pick to make in that situation. He's the best player.
I mean, don't sleep on a lockdown corner. It changes your whole defense, right?
Right.
That's like a generational talent potential.
Who could be like a third down receiver for Levis as well.
Offensive options too.
I hope they do that. I hope they take Travis Hunter, and then Cleveland's up next. And Cleveland, in my opinion, has no way out of the Deshaun Watson mess unless they draft a quarterback who can step in and start, because they can pay that guy a minimum amount for 4 to 5 years. They can't afford to get somebody like Sam Darnold because they got so much money tied up in Watson.
So I heard one thing interesting about Watson, and I don't know if it's a real possibility or not, but I've heard some people suggest that if they trade Myles Garrett, you've got to take Watson too. Ah. Like, that's the way to do it.
Including his salary,
Garrett. Well, I think, I mean, I don't know if you can split the salary, but somebody takes full responsibility on the cap. That's for sure.
Wow. That's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, it's a tough sell, but, you know,
that's so exactly. If I'm Cleveland and Tennessee takes a non-quarterback, I think I'm taking Cam Ward.
I think so, too. I think they have to.
I think that's fair.
Which in my mind plays out perfectly for the Giants, and I'm going to surprise you and say they should not draft Shedeur Sanders with the third pick.
And who would they pick?
I would go with Bison's strategy and take the best player available. You can't pass up Abdul Carter for Shedeur Sanders.
Great edge rusher.
And then I would go for Stafford or Darnold or even Justin Fields and draft a quarterback next year.
And do you need an offensive lineman?
We need offensive linemen. We always need offensive linemen.
Pass Will Campbell? Because he's pretty damn good.
If we're going to do that, maybe we trade back because he's not projected at three. But he is damn good. He's really good. So I think that's what happens. And then four, the Pats don't need a quarterback. Five, the Jags don't need a quarterback. Now you're at six with the Raiders, who would love to have Shedeur Sanders fall into their laps with the sixth pick. They like the guy. So the odd team out now is the Jets. The Jets have no quarterback, and in this draft, everybody's gone by the time you get to their seventh pick. What do they do? What do you hear the Jets are up to? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to get – because if Matt Stafford leaves the Rams, why in the world would he want to go to the shit show that is the Jets?
I've seen some mock drafts take them taking that tight end from Penn State, but
right, which would be a fantastic pick for any team.
Yeah,
then really Warren.
What's his name? Warren.
Tyler Warren.
Yeah, Ty Warren. He's pretty damn good, but they need a quarterback. They don't even have like a decent backup quarterback on the Jets anymore.
Who is the Jets quarterback next year?
Rodgers is gone, and that's all.
It's not Aaron Rodgers.
Is it Tyrod Taylor?
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's like one lung puncture away from retirement.
Oh, you know what? By the way, watch out. Jordan Travis is their third string. I could see
Jordan Travis is there. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's interesting. Ooh, I liked him in college. I actually didn't, but he's pretty good.
I don't know. Maybe they pick up a person like Ewers or Dart, Milroe. Who knows? But that's not a next year solution.
What do you think about Rooster? Like, I saw Sanders today said he's not going to the combine.
No, he's not throwing. He's going to go do the interviews and the medicals.
Okay.
Same thing with Genty. He's not going. He's not doing any of the drills, but he's going to do the interviews. Why would you if you're that guy? Ashton Genty. He's best running back coming out of college. Everybody knows it.
By the way, just a little bit of a sleeper pick. I mean, I don't know how much of a sleeper it really is, but the running back from Carolina, Hampton, he could be a heck of a player.
There are some really good running backs coming out.
Yeah, he'll go late. In fact, that's a guy who Washington might end up with, depending on how things shake out. But talking about running backs, he could be a little bit of a value pick there.
Yeah. Well, what round did you draft Bucky in?
Late, man.
Fourth round, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
The Giants picked up their starting rookie running back in the sixth round, and he had a good year.
It'll be interesting to see the emphasis on running backs now. I mean, I know Saquon is Saquon, but if you have a good one, can be a complete difference maker.
Yep. Bison's, you have to run.
Yeah, I'm going to be running, guys. I'm going to hand this over to you, Rooster, and I'll let you guys take it home.
All right. Safe travels.
All right.
Bison, where are you right now? Are you in D.C.?
I'm in Miami right now. I'm heading back to D.C. starting another trial.
All right. All right. Good luck.
See you in a couple months.
Anybody have a punchable face?
No.
That's a first. It's an all-time first. All right. Hope, you have a lasso.
I got a lasso. I don't know if you had a chance to see any of the PGA golf yesterday. It was the Mexican Open outside of Puerto Vallarta. But I kind of like watching sometimes. I didn't watch the whole tournament, but watching the end of those tournaments when you have guys who you have never heard of, but yet they've been grinding their ass off for so many years. So you had a journeyman, Brian Campbell, who started 2017 on the PGA Tour, was unable to keep his card, went back to the minors, was toiled on the Corn Ferry Tour for years, finally got a promotion. The dude has never won in 186 tournaments on the PGA or the Corn Ferry Tour. Finally, yesterday, gets his opportunity. And I don't know if y'all have seen, even if you didn't see it, seen the highlights or lowlights, but he's on the second playoff hole against the longest hitter now in PGA, Aldrich Potgieter, who I think you're going to hear a lot of from South Africa. He's only 20, but this guy is knocking the ball, you know, a good 30 to 40 yards past Brian Campbell, who's like one of the shortest hitters. So Campbell, after Potgieter puts his ball in the fairway on 18, he hits what could be generously described as a cold shank. Hits shankopotamus hard right, goes into the woods on this course and gets spit back out, hits the cart path, and actually lands where he doesn't have a bad lie. Now, he's pretty far back, but it's a par five. He's able to hit a pretty nice shot approach, and then he actually stiffs his wedge to 3 feet, and the South African can't get up and down for a birdie. And so Brian Campbell wins. So his combined winning over his years on both tours was $1,487,000. That win yesterday gave him $1.26 million, put him in the Masters, the Players, the PGA Championship, and a two-year exemption on the PGA Tour. So what a great story. I mean, again, not one of the high-profile golf tournaments, but and just to see the guy's face and his girlfriend, she was just like, they were all stunned. This guy finally won something.
That's awesome.
True lasso.
Stick with it. What's the minor version of a lasso?
It's what slapping do we call that? You. It's
the
a
milk
slap.
No, that's
punching.
Punchable face.
We don't really have a minor lasso.
It's a minor lasso. It came out today that an unidentified anonymous team, maybe the Bucks, have submitted a proposal to ban the tush push. And
it wasn't the Bucks.
It was the Packers.
It was the Packers that came out. Oh, yeah. It was anonymous.
They have been revealed.
Yep.
So I would like to lasso the Packers then, and hopefully let's vote on this and let's get rid of the tush push. I think we all agree that it's horrible, and I'll be rooting for that to happen.
So you would lasso the Packers, and House would punch the Packers.
Correct. But House isn't here, so sorry.
How about the counter argument? If you don't like it, learn how to stop it.
No one can stop it.
Go get a 6'4" quarterback that can just fall forward.
No, it must be destroyed.
All right. Anybody have a buzzer beater? Let's get to the buzzer beaters.
I've got one, and I'm gonna break whatever your rule was. Must see TV on TNT in LA at Staples. The Dallas Mavericks are going to go play at Luka's new home, and there's a lot of excitement about seeing what Luka could do. He had finally had a good game. I think he's starting to feel better. 32 points the other night against Jokic and the Nuggets. And I'm thinking Luka is just going to be spitting nails. He's going to try to get 50. He's going to try to do everything he can to humiliate the Mavericks. And I'm assuming Nico will be there. Nico was in Golden State yesterday on national TV. So Nico and his little buddy Rob Pelinka will be at the game. And it will be high drama.
I have a quick one. The Golden State Warriors did a nice thing and retired the number of Andre Iguodala, who was sort of the glue that held some of their championship teams together as a sixth guy off the bench. Really good dude. Started out with the Sixers and had a tremendous superstar career going for a little while there. And then just graciously slid right into the role of bench player on the Warriors and helped that team for years. Good move, classy move by the Warriors to retire that number.
I got one. I mentioned a few weeks ago that this was kind of a milk slap too against the NCAA, that Nebraska had canceled their spring football game. Texas and USC, I said others would follow suit. They have now canceled their spring game for fear of losing players to the transfer portal after showing them off in the spring game.
They got
to
fix that.
We got problems there. Those spring games are fun, and many more will fall soon, I'm sure.
All right. Well, we will see you for episode 205, and hopefully Bison and House will join us then, and we'll have a full team ready to go.
See you next week.
See you next week, everyone.
Later.